Committee of Natural Resources, Subcommittee of the Joint Ways and Means to order, and open the public hearing for House Bill 5017, the Oregon Office of Energy. And Mr. Graney, if you could go through the material you put on our desk here this morning, that'd be great.
Yes, Chairman, members of the committee, there are a couple of things there for you. First, there's a letter addressed to Senator Dukes that responds to a request for additional information about a residential energy taxpayer program, provides some more information on the types of equipment and features that are eligible for the tax credit, as well as a brochure and a fact sheet with frequently asked questions about it.
Mike, if I could break in for just a minute. Representative Johnson has a guest here today that she'd like to introduce and put on the record. So,
thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for your courtesy. I'd like to introduce Rachel Roscoe. She is a sophomore at Astoria High School and the editor of the school newspaper, and she's been with me today up in my office helping and coming to committee, and she was a page this morning.
Welcome. Welcome. And this is the most exciting committee in the building.
Most intellect, at least.
Thank you.
The most important.
Yeah, from your perspective, probably at least today anyway, right?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, and thank you, Mike, for letting me break in.
And again, just some more details on the tax credit program that we talked about yesterday. Secondly, there's some information on shipments of radioactive materials by not only truck but also rail and barge. Rail and barge shipments that do occur in the state, this is in response to the question you had yesterday, Mr. Chairman, are done by the Navy exclusively at this point. And I did go back and check our records also on the accident rates. In the last 2 years, we had one truck carrying radioactive materials that went off the road. It did not release any radioactive materials. We actually haven't had any spills from shipments in some time now. That information there, it's actually from our website, also gives you the numbers of shipments. And while they've been going down the last few years, the last page of that website talks about the prospects of additional shipments likely to be occurring both into and out of Hanford as the cleanup effort goes forward, and all those shipments will go through Oregon. Also provided a picture there of the spent fuel containers that Trojan, again, this was in response to a question by Senator Dukes. That's what the this is called dry cask storage, and the spent fuel will be put inside of those. You can see they're quite large, about 20 feet tall, and those in turn will be in a building. But these are the when the high level spent fuel is moved out of the pool that it's in now, it will go into those containers.
How long are these supposed to last? Sorry.
Actually, what Rep. Johnson was ahead of you.
I am delighted to hear you say that these are not loaded yet. The security seems a little casual.
Put the rope there.
And now I defer to Senator, the Representative Morgan's serious question.
Mr. Chairman, Morgan, these are designed for 50 to 75 years. So one thing that's about double the life of the large tanks at Trojan. These are intended for much longer storage. There will be security. These are, of course, not built yet, and the site itself is secure. So these are on the site. That the site itself, the whole since September 11th, the Trojan site, security has been upgraded as it has at all nuclear plants.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If the committee would indulge me, and I know Senator Dukes has an interest in this too, to pursue Trojan for just a moment. Frequently in Columbia County particularly, different ideas are raised about activities that could occur at the former Trojan campus. And hearing you say that since 9/11 the level of security at Trojan has been increased is comforting, knowing that there's spent fuel there. But given the current limitations, what is the range of activities that could be considered at Trojan as long as the spent rods are still there and the security alert is in effect?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, that's something that I think we'll have to take a fresh look at in light of the added security. But in general, first of all, putting the rods into the dry cast storage is a safer form of storage. It's also harder to get access to it. It's harder to do anything with it. So in a sense, it's more secure just in that form right there. Previously, while this fuel has been in the pool, PGE has been in discussions with NRC about whether a power plant could be sited on the Trojan site, and NRC was positive about that. So I think there are a number of uses that could be done at the site that probably, with the movement of the spent fuel into the dry cask storage, be more opportunities that may be counterbalanced by some added security, at least around the spent fuel. But that spent fuel building will be the only building that really has any kind of radioactive components in it.
One follow-up. I could understand on a campus like the Trojan campus that siting another energy production facility there would make sense, particularly with proximity to natural gas and things like that. How about some more public accommodation, including aggregations of people, like a park or using the buildings for academic facilities?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Johnson, I think all that's quite possible. In fact, I think some of the buildings are being used for classrooms right now, and they're physically a little ways from the containment and the spent fuel building itself. So they can really restrict security to a small area. There's no release of radiation to the area. That's not a concern. You can walk right up to the building in terms of physically, especially when these fuel rods are in the canisters. So there will be quite a bit of, I think, flexibility on what the site can be used for. There will be need to be some security in terms of the rods, even in that form, but I think the sort of the secure footprint will be pretty small.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the last thing that you had asked us about was putting together a comparison or a county-by-county of the energy supplier assessment that's paid versus the benefits that go back to each county. That's something we will put together for you. It'll take us a little time, but we'll try to get back to you in the next week or two on that. We'll have a list by county, and we'll share that not only with the committee but also with our interested audience, people who pay the fees, and get that word out to them, too.
Okay. Any comments, questions from the committee? Mr. Graney, I'm going to raise an issue that you probably have no authority over, but I'm just interested in your comments. And let me give you a little background from where I'm coming from with my question. We're just now finalizing some decisions trying to get access for natural gas to Coos County area, South Coast. And what we've gone through there is we found that when the federal government, in this case, deregulated natural gas some years ago, I think the early 90s. What that did was allow energy companies, not allow them to blend their rates to build a facility and give service to outlying areas, such as Coos County. My question is that with deregulation of electricity...
Johnson, report.
Yes, sir, Colonel. May I be excused, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, I think so. I heard a higher power. In your opinion, does that make it more difficult, whether it's upgrading an electrical line or increasing capacity to areas that do not have adequate service, or maybe in the future have something, industry that wants to come to town or something? Is this going to make it more difficult to get additional service to those areas?
Mr. Chairman, I think it will at least make it more unpredictable. I think that's the downside of deregulation. I think the upside is that often there is reduction in costs, and I think to the power plant development. In the early 1990s, we saw a series of new natural gas plants that were built not by utilities but by They're called merchant plants by private power developers, and the rates with the new technologies were very low compared to existing power plants. Two downsides. One, we had, of course, the last couple of years, for a number of other reasons, a huge increase in the price of that power. But we've also had an unpredictability on scheduling, when we don't have control of when power plants come online and when they do. When everything was in a regulated system through the Public Utility Commission. I think you'll see some of the same things here, and this is an area that's really more, in terms of legal authority, the PUCs, but deregulation does, I think, make it more unpredictable, and particularly in new areas, new expansions, those tend to be where it's most profitable, which tends to be in the more heavily populated areas. I think there is a real concern there.
Another question I might present to you. There are many variables, whether the demand from California is one example, the snowpack is another example, the rates, power is another thing. My concern is that are we on track to prevent what we saw 2 years ago in developing more energy sources or conservation or whatever it takes to level out this playing field? Or are there still, you know, we see Bonneville Power's rates are going to take some increase. Are we still in a very volatile energy market? And the concern is that that's a huge unknown as we try to recover our economy.
Right. Mr. Chairman, it is an unknown. Right now it's less volatile, but I won't say it's not volatile at all. And it's less volatile because more power plants have come online in the last few years, since 2001, both in Oregon and in Washington and California. We have approved additional power plants, some of which are going forward, some of which, I think, reflecting this deregulated market, are not. And that does concern me, that when the state approves a power plant, we really expect it to go forward. We have no control over whether it does or not, and we're to more extent in the other western states, but even here in Oregon, we're starting to see power plants that have been approved aren't going forward. And some of it's financing reasons, some of it may be speculation, people waiting for power prices to go up before they build. And we don't have a good mechanism for controlling that with the deregulated wholesale market on the federal level. I think on the retail level and in the state, the approach the deregulation and restructuring bill took last session tried to build in additional protections, especially for residential ratepayers. So it's a limited deregulation, and whether it works successfully or not, I guess only time will tell. At the same time, I think we need to push for more energy conservation so that people aren't as vulnerable in terms of their energy demand if the rates go up, and diversify our resources to try to get more local control, like wind projects that will help diversify. So if natural gas prices go up, if the BPA prices continue to go up, we've got some alternative resources there that will put some pressure back to keep the prices from going up so high. We're in a better situation, but we're not out of the woods by any means.
Is it your office's responsibility to monitor the market growth, whether it's industrial, residential, or just the fact that, I know 2 years ago we were talking about the computers being coming online, mm-hmm. and has increased the demand in the market?
Yes.
Are we watching that? Are you watching that, and does that gauge how fast we need to develop new sources of energy?
Mr. Chairman, yes, and part of that is in the energy plan that I think I provided to all of you. We talk about issues like that. We also provide that information to the Public Utility Commission when they review the utilities lease cost plans, they're called. It's the utilities planning document for when and how they expect to acquire new resources. And because most of those resources they're purchasing on the open market now instead of building themselves and rate basing, that has become more complicated and less predictable, but we do provide that information.
Any other comments, questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate your input. We're going to open it up now for public comments. I only have one sign up, but we have time for more. Jeff Bisonet, I'm probably way, oh, I'm way off. I know. You sign up. So go ahead.
Thanks.
And if there's anyone else, when Jeff is done, just raise your hand and we'll give you the opportunity to.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Jeff Bisonet. I'm here representing the Citizens Utility Board of Oregon. CUB represents residential ratepayers of regulated utilities. We exist in state statute, but we are an independent nonprofit organization that is primarily funded by about 6,000 members around the state. And I just wanted to offer a very brief comments in support of the Office of Energy and urge you to approve its budget. The Office of Energy is really instrumental in the work that we do in practicing in front of the Public Utility Commission and figuring out effects of various rate cases and that sort of thing on residential customers. Mike Graney himself is always a very accessible and very consistent provider of quality inputs and information. Phil Carver, one of his senior analysts, is also over at the PUC a lot, and there's a lot of forums that deal with energy and service to residential customers across the board that Office of Energy is really providing very vital assistance in. For instance, the Portfolio Advisory Committee, which is a PUC appointed group that oversees energy options to residential customers of Portland General Electric and Pacific Power. Lisa Schwartz from the Energy Office chaired that committee for 2 years from its founding until earlier this year, and then I had the honor of following her in that chair role, and she left big footprints to follow in. Also at an advisory committee dealing with low-income energy issues, the Advisory Committee on Energy, which advises the State Department of Housing and Community Resources, Housing and Community Services. Suzanne Dillard serves on that committee, and again, providing a lot of expertise from the energy side of things of how energy policy and bill payment assistance really helps or how it impacts particularly low-income customers. I also just wanted to say real briefly about the office's tax credit programs. There were some questions raised in yesterday's hearing about those, and at a time when we're looking under every cushion, every pillow for every last bit of change that we can get, those tax credits really do make a difference to consumers and really do have an impact on the amount of energy that we use as a state and as consumers. And if people can take advantage of those tax credits and can get more efficient appliances, that means our energy usage is lower overall, and it starts to address some of the volatility questions that Chairman Messerly was just talking about. And so, and nationally, as we interact with other consumer groups across the country, Oregon really is recognized as being very innovative in offering those tax credits and being very forward-looking and giving individual consumers really an opportunity to make sure that they have the tools to respond to the energy crises like we saw in 2001 and can hopefully play a role in avoiding them altogether, certainly making them less less severe. That's basically the summary of my comments. Again, just a very strong support overall, and be happy to answer any questions that any committee member may have.
Thanks, Jeff. Any questions, comments? No? Good job. Thanks.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else again in the audience who'd like to testify in regards to this budget? If not, we'll close the public hearing And we do not have a committee tomorrow. Is that right?
That's correct.
So we'll be back here Thursday at 1 o'clock for the Department of Agriculture.
And, Mr. Chair, just to let you and the other subcommittee members know, I distributed a draft agenda next week as well.
Okay. Thank you. That will adjourn the committee.